This is Packer and Durham on ACCN and SiriusXM Channel 371.
Andrea Adelson joins us. Andrea, good morning. How are you?
Good morning, fellas. I'm great. How are you guys today?
We are pretty good for the middle of November. And again, it was a rough week for college football last week with at least 15 games canceled. We've got two more already as we start this week. We got Jim Boeheim tested positive for COVID. We had the firing of Will Muschamp. I mean, so there's all kinds of stuff going on, but we've also still got football. Knock on wood. And man alive, did we get some crazy storylines from the ACC over the weekend. And the numbers that both North Carolina and Wake Forest put up in Chapel Hill make your head spin. But Sam Howell was unbelievable. What? How about that performance?
So initially, I started out with Miami Virginia Tech on the big TV, and I had North Carolina Wake Forest on a second screen. And as I'm watching my second screen, I'm calling out every 30 seconds, Wake Forest touchdown, North Carolina touchdown, Wake Forest touchdown, North Carolina touchdown. And my daughter says to me, Mommy, put that game on the big TV. So, of course, we switched that game to the big TV. And just watching what Sam Howell was able to do in that game, I think we all knew going into the year that he could have a performance like this, but to see it unfold, and in addition to that, the catches his receivers were making in that game, De'Ami Brown, some of those frisbee-catching dogs, as you guys like to call them, you know, when you start doing the receiver highlights. Absolutely incredible performance by everybody on that North Carolina offense. And I've got to give some credit to Sam Hartman, too, because he was dealing early on in that game as well. And they also had some receivers who made some great catches. So in this season, when we've come to expect the unexpected, it was just a nice little cherry on top to what we've seen in 2020, at least up to this point.
Andrea, I'm glad you said that because Roddy and I talked about this Saturday night. The two quarterbacks combined in the ball game on Saturday were 61 of 90 for 979 yards, 10 touchdowns, and one interception. That's high-level quarterback play. I don't care where you're playing in college football.
No doubt about it. And look, I think we all have realized throughout this season that defense was going to be optional. And I think a lot of that has to do with the fact that there wasn't a lot of practice time. There wasn't spring practice. You didn't have the offseason program. We've seen tackling be an issue just across college football. And so when you get these types of performances, you get your popcorn out and you just watch and you enjoy it and you appreciate it because of what those two guys were able to do, answer for answer. And then obviously North Carolina coming back from that 21-point deficit when it seemed as if they could not miss in the second half. So I just want to tip my cap to both of those players. Just an outstanding performance. And let's forget about the defense and just praise those two guys for what they were able to do in that game.
CPAC, I've been trying to tell you. It's not bad. It's not poor. Andrea just gave us the word we need to use. It's been optional. That's what it's been, PAC. It's been optional. It's not been bad or poor. It's optional.
Yeah, right, because giving up 1,348 yards of total offense isn't bad defense. It's just optional defense. It's like I might – you know, the funny thing is, though, we just did wide receiver U.
Yeah.
And how many plays in that game did somebody get nominated with a dude dragging all over him? I mean, the plays that were made, it wasn't that these guys were wide open and everybody had fallen asleep, which we have seen. Dudes were trying to make great defensive plays, but guys are just making catches. But 1,348 yards of total offense is porous. Can we use that word today? Porous?
Optional.
Would that work?
Optional.
Whatever the word is, it doesn't matter. Sign me up for more games like that, guys.
It was crazy. Oh, by the way, let's switch gears because now back on the other television was Miami. And, you know, they found a way to win. In fact, they've now gone back-to-back weekends, Andrea. Double digits down, second half, and found ways to win. They didn't win that game last year, right? Neither one. But give Manny Diaz and his guys a ton of credit. But just how perilous was Miami going into this game? It sounds like with 13 guys on the side due to COVID, they were very fortunate to get this game in.
No doubt about that, Pack. And I jumped on the Miami post-game Zoom to hear from Manny Diaz, both about being able to win games in the fourth quarter, which is a revelation for Miami, but also about just how difficult this week was in preparing, knowing that they were down 13 players. And he said this game was on the brink of not happening. And I asked a follow-up, what do you mean on the brink? When did you guys make a final decision about when this game was going to be played? And he said, well, we had to wait on those final test results. So that's how close it was. If they had gotten final test results from that Friday testing that were different than what they got, they may not have been able to play that game. They were thin on the offensive line, thin on the defensive line. Two key positions that the ACC has noted in those medical guidelines that say if you don't have a minimum at offensive line, you don't have to play the game. And Miami just barely had that minimum to be able to play. And Manny said, you know, credit to his players, they wanted to play that game. They knew they were going into it shorthanded. They knew throughout the week in practice that it was going to be difficult. In fact, during practice, they weren't even able to give each other proper scout team looks because they were down so many guys. So for Miami to go in and do what they did in that fourth quarter, that's a testament to those players, their will to win, but also the way that Manny has instilled in them from the very beginning of the season. We have to be a fourth quarter team. Miami's never been a fourth quarter team, at least in recent history. And so they made sure that was the emphasis throughout their offseason conditioning, when they were home, working out on their own, when they were going through it once they returned to campus. They had to be better in the weight room. They had to be better than teams in the fourth quarter. They had to be the guys who weren't getting tired. And that's what we've seen these last 2 weeks for Miami, and that's paid off for them.
All right, Andrew, I want to go back to the bigger picture here for a moment, because I know every weekend you're hopping in to hear from these coaches and players post-game from all, about every ball game the league has, okay? David Teal put this stat out last week. After, through last weekend, 65 of the 71 games in the ACC have been played as scheduled, which is 91.5%. This league, because of the flexibility and the way it's kind of worked out, has done a remarkable job of getting all these games on time as they were meant to be. But the Miami-Virginia Tech game, if I'm recalling correctly, is either the third or fourth game this year that has come down to a single body potentially meaning a yes or no to playing a ball game. Do you worry, as somebody that sees the league from just about every angle every week, that we're getting into the deeper, darker part of the schedule here where we may have more of this before we get to the end?
Yes, I am worried about that because of the spikes that we have seen across the country. And that is the biggest reason for concern. Before the year began, the biggest thing that we heard from the folks who are making these decisions is there's going to be a second wave. At some point, there's going to be a second wave. That's what their medical experts were telling them. That's what all the doctors on the medical advisory group were telling them. So how do we do our best to try and at least mitigate that, knowing there would be a second wave? And now that second wave is here into November. And so, of course, there's a huge reason for concern when you look ahead to these final few weeks of the season. Are they going to be able to be played, all of them? And then what happens now with bowl games and the college football playoff, where there's discussion now about what if a team isn't ready? What if a team hasn't played all their games? Do we move it? And I read this morning that the bowl game in El Paso now, because of the horrific spikes that they've seen in that city, just might be canceled altogether if they don't get a handle on that. So, yes, I'm extremely concerned about what this next month is going to look like. And I just urge everybody all around us to take the necessary precautions to keep not only yourself safe, but keep others around you safe, because I think it's only going to get worse before it gets better. I think that's what administrators are feeling right now as they start looking across the landscape and start seeing more and more games get canceled or being on the brink of being canceled. I don't know if that Texas A&M is going to be able to play this week. That's another game that's currently on the bubble. And they are going to have some college football playoff ramifications involved with their scheduling. What about Alabama, LSU? How's that one going to get rescheduled? And that's the SEC. But obviously in the ACC, there's still a lot of games left to be played that are going to have ramifications on who's going to play in that ACC championship game. So I just hope that folks around us are continuing to take the type of precautions that need to be taken. I know schools are currently taking those precautions with the testing and the mask wearing and reminding everyone to wash their hands and to not go out and socialize with friends who are outside the athletic department. So you just have to hope that all of these precautions that everybody's taking is going to allow these games to be finished the way that they were scheduled to be finished.
Andrew, speaking of finishing games, if you're Florida State, you had the announcement last week, many big-time stars either opting out or injury, you're not going to see him again. Wes had the game Saturday night where they played as hard as they could. It's kind of certainly a youth movement for Mike Norvell. Now, here comes Clemson, fresh off a loss, 2 weeks to get ready, trying to get healthy. Trevor Lawrence is back. What do you think we see with Florida State to close the year? What's your expectations?
Pack, my expectation is that Florida State is not even going to be in the same building as Clemson on Saturday. Let's just start with that game on Saturday. This is a perfect storm of badness, let's just say, for Florida State. When you look at all the players that they've lost, this is a clear youth movement for this team. And Clemson is going to be coming into this game absolutely with something to prove, to make a statement. Trevor Lawrence is going to be back. I think it's going to be really ugly for them. So I'm not really going to put too much into this game against Clemson for Florida State, because I think we all kind of agree it's probably a foregone conclusion what is going to happen. The final two games of the season for me is where we're going to know more about Florida State. It's Virginia and it's Duke. And on paper, those are two games in which you have to think Florida State should be competitive in those two games. Now, will they be competitive? And what is rock bottom for this program? I tweeted about this on Saturday during the game, and I watched Wes and Roddy do the game, and I listened to their comments. And it's absolutely hard to watch Florida State right now. But I don't think Florida State can start rebuilding its program until it absolutely hits rock bottom. What does that look like? Was rock bottom last weekend? Is it against Clemson? Is it the next 2 weeks against Virginia and Duke? I don't know the answer to that. And I don't even know if Mike Norvell knows the answer to that. And when is it safe to say, okay, this is the bottom of where we're going to be. Now let's start to rebuild what our hopes are, because clearly there are myriad issues across the board at Florida State right now, and they are hard to fix in just a season or a couple of games here down the stretch. I think the important thing is for the young players on this team to be put in situations where they can gain a little bit of confidence in these games, where they can have some positivity, make some positive plays, be competitive, so that way you can at least have a springboard going into the next season. But from everything I've heard, the purge of players is not going to end with last week. There will be more players that are going to opt out and end up leaving the program. We'll see where that ends up leaving Florida State headed into next season.
Andrea, real quick here, and just as a follow-up to having Florida State the last couple of weeks, and Mike Norvell is going to do a really good job there. That's number one. But here's the part for Florida State fans. The word rebuild gets thrown around a lot, okay? Now, the Willie Taggart rebuild went 18 months. That's not an extension. Mike Norvell is not an extension of the Willie Taggart rebuild. You essentially went back to zero when Jimbo Fisher went to Texas A&M, right? Willie Taggart comes in, and after 18 months, you got out of that rebuild, and you've gone back to zero again. I think that's what everybody kind of has to understand here. Mike Norvell has got a really good staff. He's a successful coach. He's going to put ultimately a very good product on the field, but it's going to take some time. And people, and Pac says this, we use the word all the time, there's going to have to be some patience here.
No question about that, Wes. And there is a clear problem when you look at what's happened in that locker room. There are trust issues, and it really doesn't have a lot to do with Mike Norvell. It has more to do with what has happened to these players over the last four seasons. We're talking about a third different head coach now, where these players are looking around and saying, who do I trust right now? Which coach do I trust? Who's going to have my back? This coach didn't recruit me. How do I know that this guy is going to have my best interests at heart? And it's a function of where Florida State is as a football program. Those trust issues, they manifest themselves on the football field. So that's number one. I think number two for Mike Norvell is just trying to instill any kind of belief in his players that you can trust us, you can believe in us. But these players are so scarred by what has happened to them since Jimbo Fisher left that it's very difficult now to start getting these players to have that buy-in when it's only been, what, 8 months, yeah. 9 months since Mike Norvell has been there. So that, to me, is the biggest key in all of this. You can't just snap your fingers and say, hey, guys, trust me, it'll be great. That's not how this works. The pandemic, I don't think, helped the situation at all for Florida State. And so now you're in a position where you're closing out the season. It's not going well. You've got all these young guys playing. You've got veterans who've decided they want to opt out or not be around the team anymore. Where's the direction? Where's the identity? Where's the leadership? There's a vacuum right now. And it's going to be on Mike Norvell and his staff to build these guys back up to a point where they can feel good about themselves. Forget about winning games. Where they can feel good about themselves when they step onto a football field. That has been missing now at Florida State for quite some time. And so they're absolutely has to be patience. This cannot be an 18-month deal. This has to be Mike Norvell being given the time that he needs to get this program headed in the right direction. And it's not just going to be a year. From what everybody that I've talked to, they think it's going to be years, maybe in the range of 5 to 6. And they have to be patient about that.
All right. Great stuff, Andrea. Thank you as always. Have a good week. Always appreciate the Monday visits from Andrea Adelson. You can read all of her great stuff at ESPN.com. Sit tight. More Packer and Durham best and worst of the weekend coming up next on a Monday. We move along. Oh, Brian Kelly, win 100. You bet you're on there. You know we got catches. A lot of them, too. Back after this on Packer.
This is the Packer and Durham podcast. Here's Mark Packer and Wes Durham.
Packer and Durham on a Monday. Again, hope everybody had a good weekend for the most part. Speaking of weekends, every Monday we give you the best of and the worst of. And we start on a positive note, Wes, with the best of the weekend. You want to lead?
You've already nailed the best of the weekend. I mean, when you talk about the two superpowers getting to play for an ACC championship, that's clearly the best of the weekend. And it just so happened Florida State won it and continues to roll for Mark Kerkorian, right?
7 of the last 10 titles. You can find them in Tallahassee, Florida. And we know North Carolina for seemingly decades upon decades upon decades upon decades had been the standard. These two, again, I keep telling you, we are spoiled in this league from a soccer perspective because the women and the men put on unbelievable shows. And these two did exactly that yesterday. Noles win 3-2, second in the last 3 years, 7 in the last 10. Who knows what the spring will hold for us moving forward, but they did not see each other in the regular season. Both undefeated, ranked 1 and 2 in the country. And if you were not entertained, I can't help you. I mean, those two are just great, 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 great programs.
Yeah. And that's the kind of stuff that, you know, you hope you can pull this off every year. When you get two games like that, when you get a game like that involving two superpowers in women's soccer, it's pretty impressive. Brian Kelly, congratulations. He's part of the best of the weekend, right, Pac? 100 wins as Notre Dame's coach.
And as he told us in the soundbite that we played about an hour and a half ago, you know, you got to hang around this joint a while to win 100, and he's right. And he's got it on a roll. 3 straight years of 10 or more, undefeated, 8-0, ranked number 2, leader in the clubhouse from an ACC perspective. Everybody's chasing the Irish, trying to get to Charlotte. We'll see how this thing plays out. North Carolina hosts Notre Dame coming up, not this week, next Friday, right? Yeah. Right after Thanksgiving. And that'll be another crazy wild game in all likelihood. But congratulations to Brian Kelly.
Mark has said that North Carolina is the winner of the mythical Food Lion Cup with the victory over Wake Forest.
Yeah, we created that last week on the show. When you win the North Carolina NC State Duke Wake Forest sweepstakes, you get this new mythical title. We figured Food Lion, being a corporate proud partner of the ACC, North Carolina based, why not? Food Lion Cup, it goes to the folks in Chapel Hill. And had this thing existed last year, you'd have found it in Winston-Salem because the Deacs last year were the Food Lion Cup winners. So there it is. Congratulations to UNC and the mythical Food Lion Cup. And why the Food Lion executives haven't been calling to claim that and say, hey, PAC's on to something on that. You know, wake up, boys. We're making life easy for you. Let's go. It's right there in front of you.
They're right up the road. PAC, you could ride up there and sell it to them.
I'd be more than happy to gas up the Ford F-150, stop by Lexington Barbecue, or more importantly, maybe a Bojangles biscuit on the way, another corporate partner. Go up and see the buddies at Food Lion and knock that thing out, man. We got to create a trophy for that thing. We do. Why not?
Yeah. There you go. Charlottesville, Virginia, best of the weekend. Tough outcome, but Malik Cunningham, 197 yards.
Whew.
Including this beauty. How about the touchdown run, though, PAC? The touchdown run's my favorite.
Yeah, it looked like he got shot out of a cannon. Right there.
Look at this. Whoa.
He's a baller. And, you know, no 2-2.
No, he can play.
No Hawkins. He really had the burden of really having to create more. And again, the guy is a ball player. Buck 97 on the ground. That's strong.
Yep. Miami wins another one on the road. We talked about with Andrea how close it was to Miami just not playing and kind of skirting the line with the players unavailable. Well, their second half road magic becomes a thing again. That's Mark Pope's touchdown. The defense rallies around Hendon Hooker in the second half. They outscored the Hokies 22-10 the last 35 minutes of the ball game to pull off the victory.
That's how you develop a program, Wes. You win games like what Miami has done the last 2 weeks on the road, both games, down double digits, second half, find a way to win. Doesn't have to be pretty, just needs to be a W. And that's exactly what Manny Diaz is building right now in Coral Gables.
One of the last times Sam Howell was with us on this show, Packer proclaimed that he was going to throw for 18 gazillion yards. Well, Saturday, he was close.
About 16.5 gazillion. Man, he was ridiculous. This game was ridiculous. Nuts. And by the way, Hartman was great, too, now that you mentioned him. But, yeah, Sam Howell, fantastic. 550, 7 touchdowns, 6 in the air, 1 on the ground, down 21 in the third quarter, no problem. It was just a wild, crazy game. I said last week I thought it was going to be the best game in the country involving teams that don't have a number beside their name, and sure enough, that's exactly what you got Saturday. It was crazy.
61 of 90 for 979 yards, 10 touchdowns, 1 interception from the 2 quarterbacks. That's crazy numbers.
Yep. You couldn't do that against air.
No. No, couldn't do it if you were standing in your driveway, throwing to your kid. Jalen Phillips, Miami's defensive end. He's probably going to be on that player of the week list. We'll show you at the end of the show tomorrow.
Yeah, 15.
5 tackles
everywhere.
Behind the line, 2 of them sacks.
Yep. 15 was all over the joint, man. He is a big-time player. Again, the transfer, UCLA, and again, one of many that Miami has incorporated with this football season. But 15 on Saturday, they had a hard time blocking 15 now.
Yep. Thayer Thomas, career high 11 catches in the win for NC State. I think he had 8 of them or 6 of them in the first drive the other night. Really outstanding. Helped Bailey Hockman get settled in again at quarterback. NC State was very impressive, I thought. You know, PAC, I mean, State did what you had to do the other night to keep developing a team in 2020. And I can't say enough about a team that struggled to win games last year through a lot of injuries, things like that, and they have found a way in 2020 to kind of keep the positive vibe going. And good for NC State. Nice win over Florida State the other night.
And I said this a couple weeks ago. You look at the second half of their schedule, it is very doable. And I know they'll look back at the Miami game and kick themselves, woulda, coulda, shoulda, and they've had roller coaster games. But NC State can still close strong. Look at what they've got left, and you'll go, hey, you know what? Well, Dave Doran can just tie Dick Sheridan, number two on the all-time win list at NC State. I think the Pack still got some W's in their back pocket.
Yeah. In fact, they've got, Liberty, who's going to be firmly in the top 25 and undefeated, coming to Carter-Finley Stadium on Saturday. Kamarni Smith of Clemson, how about a hat trick in the ACC quarters yesterday at Duke?
Dude, he was unstoppable.
Clemson wins 4-1. Yep.
Now keep in mind,
hat-trick for Kamarni Smith.
And I gave you that stat earlier. The top five teams in the country, not the league, in the country were from the ACC heading into this tournament, and three of the five lost in the quarterfinals. It just goes to show you again how good this league is in soccer. Men and women, it is sensational.
Finally, on Best of the Weekend, let's go to Augusta. Sunday in November. At Augusta, Andy Ogletree got off to a rocky start on Thursday, and the former Ramblin' Wreck from Georgia Tech ends up being the low am at the Masters.
Look, Tiger Woods in the eye yesterday and said, hey, big man, you're one back. That's what he did. You are one back, Tiger.
All right. Congratulations to Andy Ogletree, who said afterwards in the Butler cabin at some point here in the future, he will turn pro. Nice way to go out as an am, by the way, Andy.
No doubt. Play great.
Sit tight when we come back. Worst of the weekend, and we've got breaking news from Derby City. We'll check in, see what's going on with Louisville as part of that breaking news right after this.
The Packer and Durham Podcast. This is the Packer and Durham Podcast.
Packer and Durham on a Monday. All right, we gave you the best of the weekend. Unfortunately, we have to do this. Time for the worst of the weekend, Wes. And unfortunately, it's not just one or two items. There are a few that we have to address.
No, we got a handful here. Let's start with Wake Forest, Virginia Tech. They can't hold double-digit second-half leads back.
Got to close.
Hokies let it get away.
Yep.
Oh, man.
Got to close.
Deacon's 21-point lead. But you just sensed that that game was not going to end till late anyway, right? Carolina Wake, that just seemed like that was going to the end, didn't it?
Well, when you got double-digit leads in the second half, I mean, hey, it's hard to win games, but when you've got that kind of lead, you've got to figure out a way to do it. And I gave you the stat about Virginia Tech earlier today. Now, 1-10 at home versus ranked teams since 2010. That's Lane Stadium we're talking about. We're talking about Virginia Tech football. You're up double digits on Miami. You've got to win that game somehow. Some way, you got to win that game.
Yep. Pitt and Georgia Tech, that was announced that it was going to be postponed. So Pat Narduzzi's team, who had a little momentum off the win in Tallahassee, Jeff Collins' group, now they pivot. And all of a sudden, you know, they'll play December the 12th. We talked about that last week. And then we found out that Miami skated it and Louisville skated it. To a degree, but still managed to play. So that was a tough one from worst of the weekend. Florida State defensively, and again, I know Marvin Wilson had opted out, and they had some guys out the other night. They did get Hamza Nasruldeen back. NC State was 10 of 15 on third down in the ball game against the Noles the other night in Raleigh. So Florida State surrendered a heavy, heavy number on third down to the Wolfpack. Here's a third and 12, by the way. And Bailey Hockman, look at that. Bang, right there.
Got to get off the field, Wes. I mean, we've been talking this all year long. The Florida State defense, and, hey, I know it's been a tough gig. I get it. But this is a team that going in the year had Sunday dudes on that side. And defensively, they've given up a ton of points. And when you can't get off the field and you're on the road, it normally is a long night. Mm-hmm. And it was for Florida State.
Pack told you, he says there was no defense being played Saturday in Chapel Hill for the Food Line Cup. Andre Adelson and I have declared that defense was optional, and it was 1,348 total yards of optional. How's that?
There's no D in North Carolina. There's no D in Wake Forest. And there's no D in Food Line Cup. Although I take that back, there is a D. Sorry. Excuse me, Food Line.
Yeah.
But you know what, Wes? It was still a fun game to watch. I mean, the offensive efforts on both sides were spectacular. And, again, we showed you on wide receiver U, the catches that were made were not wide open. I mean, guys were just making unbelievable plays. So the offensive efficiency by both teams in that game were simply spectacular.
The Associated Press football poll's been discussed a few times on this program this fall.
So glad to get rid of it.
Worst of the week, Miami wins on the road and dropped in the poll.
Well, no, they won on the road as an underdog, Wes. That's the key here. They were a dog on the road with 13 guys not playing due to COVID. They win the game and they drop three spots in the poll. I am so thankful, thankful that we are 8 days away from the College Football Playoff Committee giving us a poll. The AP has become laughable. Laughable.
Yeah.
Again, great for Notre Dame, Clemson, Miami. You're ranked, rightfully so. But I mean, it makes no sense. I keep telling folks you can't get crazy with the AP because, quite frankly, it serves zero purpose whatsoever in determining a champion.
So there you have it. Other notes just quickly here before we get to our breaking news. Both men's and women's soccer teams at Carolina, they fell this weekend.
Yep.
Florida State, a couple of goals early in the ACC championship game. And the men's team fell in the quarterfinals
in overtime
of the ACC tournament. Yeah. So there you go. 3-2 the final there, and Notre Dame a winner in overtime. And Jim Boeheim, Hall of Fame coach of the Syracuse Orange, has tested positive for the coronavirus, and we wish Coach Boeheim well. We started off the show talking about that. He and Tom Izzo, two notable names in college basketball, have tested positive so far. So our thoughts and prayers with Coach to return quickly. His team's scheduled to open a week from Wednesday, by the way, against Bryant. So that's our worst of the weekend. Okay, off to Louisville here for a note a moment ago from Bruce Feldman of The Athletic. Javian Hawkins, the running back for the Cardinals, who is 51% of their run game, has opted out for the remainder of the season and will enter the 2021 NFL draft. So Hawkins, who did not play last Saturday at Virginia, and Scott Satterfield is scheduled to meet with the media later today. But Hawkins has elected not to play for the Cards in their final three ball games, Mark.
Listen, in this day and age, you do what you have to do. I've said this from day one, given the pandemic, this is a year unlike any other. If you have aspirations to get to the next level and you're just not comfortable, I totally get it. From a selfish standpoint, loved watching him play for Louisville and wished he could have finished the season, but I get it. We don't know all the details behind the decision, but if you are in a position where you think you can get to the next level, I get it. I understand. So I hate it from an ACC perspective. I totally respect his decision and wish him the very best. It's been a joy to watch him play.
Yeah, and it was interesting. I thought about this a moment ago, Mark, because Andrea just mentioned that she suspects there may be potential for more of this in the next couple of weeks. Now, again, I know we touched on this before. This goes back to kind of where you were talking about in August, right? What would happen when things didn't go well? What would happen maybe when your particular team was not reaching the expectations or the goals? And we mentioned that Louisville, for what we thought we would get, it's not gone as well. So here's Hawkins stepping out. Now remember, Cisco got injured. Trill Williams opted out on the Syracuse side. We've had opt-outs now at Florida State. Those teams are toward the bottom of the ACC.
It's exactly what I said 2 months ago, 3 months ago, that my biggest concern is once we get started, if you have a team that you had big expectations for, if you got past the halfway point and you were in struggling and things were not working out well, would you find teams still be as dedicated from a mental standpoint to go through the grind just to be eligible to play? And there will be certain individuals, there'll be certain teams that will reach a point where maybe you're watching their games, and you're like, you know, I just don't think I'm getting the effort. Well, you can kind of understand if you understand the grind all these guys have been through since the middle of June. And then you get a story like this, you know, you watch a game like Penn State. I mean, preseason top 10 team, 0-4. And you're watching them play and you're like, oh, they look like they're just kind of going through the motion. Again, this year is unlike anything we've ever seen. It's not your typical deal. So when you see an individual make a decision like this, or you see a team that you thought was going to be really good that's really struggling and just doesn't look like they're connected, I think you can connect the dots and kind of understand where everybody is. This has been hard, even for teams that are having great years. This is hard. When you get a game on Saturday, embrace it, man. As a fan, a broadcaster, a player, a coach, and as administrator, athletic director, whatever, we are fortunate to get games. And last week was another reminder to all of us. When you saw 15 games get canceled or postponed, you embrace what you get and enjoy it. And while your team may lose, if, as a fan, hey, you know what? Don't be bummed out. Just be glad you had a chance to watch your team play. And that's almost the mindset you've got to take because nothing is guaranteed here. I keep telling you, COVID doesn't care. And so for all these individuals, they're in a position where they're going, hey, I got to really worry about me now. I kind of get it, Wes. It's right. Like, you know, you got to do what you got to do.
Yeah. I'm just making notes here. Javian Hawkins joins a list that now these are in-season opt-outs. Now, you know, Marvin Wilson had an injury, won't play the rest of the regular season, right? But these are in-season opt-outs, Pac. Now, let's double-check me on my math, and as we all know, that's suspect, right?
No, you're suspect.
So, yeah, my math is suspect.
Yeah, right.
Paris, okay. Andre Sisco got injured opt-out. That would still make the list because he did opt-out. Trill Williams, opt-out. Those are the Syracuse. Tamarian Terry last week's an opt-out for Florida State, right?
Right.
Harris Ford was an opt-out for Pittsburgh. Javian Hawkins is an opt-out for Louisville. Right. Am I missing anybody?
Well,
I don't think so, right?
That's in-season, right? We're not even talking about preseason, which the ACC
– that's in-season, yeah.
I was going to say, because even preseason, we got a dose from both Miami and Pittsburgh and others.
Oh, yeah.
Where we lost some great quality players. And you got it. I mean, this is not exclusive to the ACC. This has been going on around the country. And I suspect, like Andrea pointed out about a half an hour ago when she was on with us, that you're going to probably see some more names pop up between now and Thanksgiving. And I think she's 100% right.
Yeah. So that's 5 guys. What, here in the last 3 weeks, Pac? Cisco's a little further back than that, but Ford and Williams were about the same week. Terry last week, Hawkins this week, and we're Monday. So you may have, you know, a couple more before the week is out. Who knows? But Javian Hawkins of Louisville has at least – and again, Scott Satterfield speaking to the media, and we'll have more on this tomorrow morning when we join you. And by the way, I'm sure they'll cover it tonight on All ACC, which comes your way at 8 o'clock right here on ACC Network. Kelsey Riggs and Dallin Cuff will go 4 downs with Roddy Jones, recapping a wild Saturday of ACC football. Plus, Mike Schmitz joins them. Everything you need to know from an ACC perspective heading into the NBA draft this week. All ACC tonight, 8 o'clock Eastern, right here on ACC Network. And when we come back to close the Monday, oh, no. Oh, we got an on-this-date pack. Oh, Coach Bowden, I know. Even all these years later. Stay tuned. Wide right one when we come back.
Packer and Durham. The Packer and Durham podcast.
Packer and Durham. Final segment on a Monday. A very interesting weekend, as West Durham would like to say. An interesting weekend. And it was a little bit of everything going on that front. So for the last segment, Mr. Durham, we do have a little anniversary today, don't we?
Yes, we do. On this date, 13 years ago, Vicky and I got married. Yep, we did. We got married. Interesting little story here. We got married on a Friday night before North Carolina played Georgia Tech at Grant Field. We got married at 6:30 on a Friday night because as we looked at the calendar, we both decided we didn't want to get married in the heat of the summer for obvious reasons, right, Pac, especially in Georgia. So we got married on a crisp Friday night in Atlanta. And the next day at noon, North Carolina and Georgia Tech play football at Grant Field. So we had the groom and the father of the groom there, which was appropriate, I thought. And we were able to get married. And then the Falcons also had a home game on Sunday. So and then we went on a honeymoon in March to Northern California and bought a lot of wine. But other than that, we got married 13 years ago today.
Congratulations.
Sure. So happy anniversary. Well, and like you, sir, our wives, mine and yours, are on a gold card angel status.
No doubt.
They have put up with a lot, a whole lot in this world,
and
right?
You wonder why I was sharing my double oak Woodford Reserve and making s'mores for my wife with a fire? That's why. You do the little things. You do the little things, right? But congratulations to Vicky for putting up with you.
Yeah, congratulations to Vicky for putting up with me. And everybody, people have often asked, is that Grant Field? Yes. Jeff Gilbert, who was the operations guy at Georgia Tech in the athletic department, after we got married, we went to Grant Field, and they turned on the lights in the stadium since Vicky had worked for the men's golf program for so many years at Georgia Tech. And I, of course, had done the ball games there, and that's kind of where we met. They turned on the lights at Grant Field, and we went and made pictures on our wedding night at Grant Field.
I thought that picture was behind me. Did you take that with you and bring it back to Cartersville?
No. We've got several copies. This is a newspaper article they did on Vicky when we moved up here. And I know you've had the picture back there before. She noted that when we came back in June. You got it?
I got it. I knew I had it back here somewhere. I just couldn't find it. That's it right there.
Yeah, Grant Field. That's the night we got married. Yeah. So thank you. Very kind to let me mention that on here.
That's it. Today. Vicky looking like $1 million. And you looking like, man, I'm
Wes
a lucky dude.
Like,
and you were.
I am a lucky dude. hey, to quote the, I can recruit, Pac. Don't ever forget, I can recruit.
Keep telling, man. The deal is you got to outkick your coverage, guys. Listen up. You got to outkick your coverage.
Speaking 1991 on this date, by the way, speaking of anniversaries, 1991, wide right one, Miami beat Florida State, trailing by one with 30 seconds left. The Noles moved into position to kick a 34-yard field goal, and this. Oh, boy. Look at Bobby Bowden. Dad gummit. What? What happened? Did he miss it? Little did they know that would begin a legacy, right, Pac?
Man,
there you
what
go.
A series.
Wide right one on this day, 1991.
Games. They played some serious games.
Yeah, they did. All right.
One more thing
real
quick.
What you got there? What is that?
Martha Dudley Keller, who's a big listener, is a barbecue champion, and she won with great sauce. She sent me a pack of her world-famous barbecue sauce. I'm going to give a shout-out to Martha Dudley Keller. And, man, that will go to good use, I assure you. Thank you very much. And congratulations on the championship.
Apparently, the four WRU finalists have been determined by the expert committee.
And? You're going to tell me
Brown,
a 10-5? What are you doing there?
Brown, Morin, Brownlee, and Skoranek.
Ooh, this is going to be a tough call. I like the four. I like the four.
Those
that's a tough,
are the four
that's
finalists.
Tough.
Vote early, vote often. We'll see you tomorrow morning at 7 a.m. right here on ACC Network.
Tune into Packer and Durham weekday mornings from 7 to 10 Eastern for the best conversations about everything from the ACC. Find it on the ACC Network, SiriusXM Channel 371, and streaming on the ESPN app.